Sex Talk on WRCT, Pittsburgh at 8.3 FM. My name is Lance McGuffin. Those of you who've been listening to the show longer than a year might recognize my voice. I've been gone for about a year. Last Tuesday was to be the start of a new semester of Sex Talk, and I was especially happy because it was to mark my return to the show after a year's absence. However, the events in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania changed all that. We canceled the show, and I don't think any of us could have talked about sex on that day to save our lives. But this is a new week, and as our leaders have been telling us, it's time to get back to the business of living our lives. And so here at Sex Talk, we are going to get back to the business of educating and informing the community about canings and strippers and gay bathhouses and porn. But as we get on with the show, I'd just like to remind our listeners that although sometimes we pander to the basest instincts of humanity and act like complete jackasses, let us not forget that at its core, sex is about two things: bringing people together and the continuation of our family, societies, and species, two things that have been all on all of our minds recently. Now back to the show.
You look troubled, DJ Corey.
Well, thank you, Lance. I mean, on one hand, I'm touched by it. I mean, that message really did come from your heart, and we're all touched by that. On the other hand, it was a pretty heteronormative speech. I mean, sex isn't really about, for those of us in the homosexual community, sex isn't really about.
I understand what you're saying, DJ Corey, but until the gay scientists of the fabulous gay secret island fully develop cloning, gay kind will rely on us breeders to replenish their ranks.
Are you referring to the secret island of gay ropa?
the island of gay toys?
I haven't been privy to the name of the secret island yet. As far as I've known, that's a need-to-know basis piece of information.
The island of Dr. Moore Blow?
I thought that was the island where all the coke came from.
Sure. Well, without any further ado, I would like to... We actually have two very esteemed lesbianicists on the show tonight. We have long-time friend of the show, Piper. And are we introducing you by your actual name?
Yeah.
And her long-time special friend and partner and...
Partner in crime.
Partner in crime.
And Jamie. Wife, right? Where you guys were married at a liquor store, after all.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, as our listeners, Piper's on this.
5 years ago.
Was it really been five years? Wow.
Well, Sunday was our five-year anniversary.
Wow.
How do you get married in the liquor store? I mean, is there an actual Reverend Jim Beam that comes and does it, or some sort of form?
You referenced the liquor store clerk, I think, that married us.
Yeah, last time we talked about it on Sex Talk, went through the whole thing, and I'm sure you were listening to that. But we talked about how in Madison, Wisconsin, we got married at a liquor store.
Whoa. May I ask which liquor store in Madison, Wisconsin?
The Badger.
That could be any one of 100 liquor stores probably in Wisconsin, huh?
See, I think, I mean, we should probably, if you can tell a capsulized version of this story, it's actually a pretty good story about it. People have heard it, but you should at least maybe summarize it. Give us like the 2-minute summary. I'll start out. You hated each other. Piper was straight. You were on this road trip across the country. Pretty... So Piper was straight, but kind of one of these crazy people that, will take any bet.
Willing to experiment.
We'll try anything once.
No, she always said it was like, I fall in love with people, not genders or anything like that. Those are my favorite kind of people.
Every time you touch the microphone, baby Jesus cries. And it's because it's really loud for listeners. So we're going to try to set up another microphone, or you two are just going to have to get in cheek to cheek and share the mic, at least until Alan's going to do that. So
anyway, we were traveling across the country, and I was quote-unquote straight, and we were with some friends, a bisexual woman and a gay male, and Jamie was a lesbian, and me being the straight person in the family, and we stopped at this liquor store, because we were walking by, and there were these great signs on it, and they were, like, you know, trying to sell liquor, so they were like, you know, don't kill your father, they'll know it was you from the copy of Oedipus Rex in your bedroom, you know, overdose him on this kind of liquor for this amount of money, you know, and mommy will have only you to love. And one of the signs was like, gay weddings, only $4.95, and celebrate with such and such a liquor for $5.95. And so we thought we'd call him on it.
See, yeah, I mean, the gay wedding is just a loss leader in that case, though. I mean, I hope you know you'll be taken for a ride.
You think? So Jamie's like, hey, who will marry me? So there she is standing with a bunch of gay people, and no one will marry her. So me being the nice straight person. I said, okay, I'll marry you. So we go into the liquor store, and we're like, okay, we want a gay marriage. And it was like, he's like, oh, no one's ever called me on that before. And so he was wearing a black T-shirt, and he tore out a little piece of white paper, and he taped it onto his collar so he looked like a minister. Mm-hmm. And then he read out of a copy of Curve that we had with us. And, you know, he married us, and he gave us a free bottle of champagne. And before this, he was like, okay, you have to prove you're gay. And we're like, straight people don't have to prove they're straight. And he's like, come on, just prove you're gay. And so we're like, what do you want us to do? And he's like, you have to kiss. And so then we were like, well, you know.
Did he make you kiss in front of the security cameras?
Over and over again. I just don't understand
it. It's probably all over the web by now.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, we were trying to get out of it. You know, me being a straight girl, I don't want to kiss her. So so we said that we had just eaten Italian food and mm-hmm. that we had bad breath. And so he gave us a free pack of Big Red gum. And so we ended up kissing, and then we ended up, you know, getting married, and he gave us a free thing of champagne, and that was how we got married in Madison. But that allowed us to sort of flirt around other people and stuff, because we were always playing off this fact that we were married, and so eventually we just fell in love. And that's the story.
Cool.
Wow.
They put the cart before the horse, but sometimes that's the way it has to be.
Probably the only successful relationship ever to start in a liquor store.
We did it for financial reasons.
The tax breaks are great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, anyway, but now that we've introduced you and your history a little bit, I guess we wanted to talk about your recent workshop.
Yes, fascinating as it was.
Right, so for those listeners who didn't hear the last two paper shows, she's an anthropologist. What?
I keep talking about studio audio, but I don't know if it's a bad thing or not.
She's an anthropologist studying sex workers in Pittsburgh.
It's bad.
Sex workers in Indonesia.
Indonesia, right, okay. You did work here with sex workers in Pittsburgh, right? And so you went to a workshop recently at the Kinsey Institute.
Mm-hmm. Kinsey Institute is in Indiana, which, you know, where all good sex institutes should be. And it has a summer workshop every summer. Every year.
For our listeners, we should give a little bit of background about the Kinsey Institute. I mean, it's sort of the canonical place where sex is taken seriously as a field of study. And I forget when it sort of burst upon the scene, but it was a very controversial place for a while.
Yeah, in the 50s and the 60s, it came out, you know, as doing the Kinsey Report, and that's where, like, the whole Kinsey scale, how heterosexual, homosexual are you, a 0 to 6 scale, and the idea that sexuality is on a continuum, like, that mm-hmm. all sort of burst forth from the Kinsey Institute.
DJ Corey, hasn't your groundbreaking work shown that homosexuality can go fully into the negative numbers?
Well, I mean, actually, contrary to what you say, I actually find sexuality is on a logarithmic scale. It's like, you know, I find most people are either completely homosexual or...
tend to the power of gay.
In denial about their homosexuality, but nobody's completely straight, at least.
Okay. Fair enough. So every summer they have a big workshop?
Yeah, it's on different topics and stuff. This year's topic was high-risk sexual behaviors. And so, you know, to get into the workshop, you had to write a 2-page proposal. And then they chose the best of the best, which, of course, I was one of.
Wow.
Well, the question begs itself, then. What was your proposal?
It was on my my dissertation research in Java on the sex workers and Indonesian college students in Indonesia, and about their knowledge about AIDS before and after education programs and how international biases play into that. And then I'll leave in January to do that field work for 2 years because I got way too much funding to do it.
Sweet.
You got too much funding, which means your field work will be longer than normal?
Yeah, or? I'm actually going to go for 2 years instead of the normal 1 year.
Okay.
So anyway, so we wrote our proposals, and then we got chosen. 25 students from all over the world got chosen, and then there was 15 faculty members, the best of the sex researchers all over the world.
Are there any names we might recognize? Is there anybody who's in any way?
You know, they're all really big names, but unless you're really into sex research, like to the, like...
I mean, certainly in an empirical way, I'm really into sex research, but I don't know about your highfalutin book learning.
Yeah, I think the book learning, you're not going to... I didn't recognize half the names until I got there.
Do any of them have troublingly appropriate names like Madeline Thrustmore?
Unfortunately, no. But it's really interesting that the guy who's actually like the president of the Kinsey right now is a very like shy, conservative English man who, like, you know, is very
gay,
quiet, and... No, his wife works there as well. He could be, but his wife works there as well. But it's interesting because this place is anything but quiet and reserved.
I mean, wait, so set the scene for us physically a little bit. When you approach the Kinsey Institute, do we have giant Greco-Roman columns with naked women carved out of it? You know, are there sort of phallic shapes scattered around more or less, you know?
Yeah. According to the, no, the not at rectangle? All, actually. It's on a university campus, and it just takes up one building within the university campus. although it's its own entity outside of the university and thus doesn't have to sort of play by university procedures.
Much like genitals on the human body, right?
Exactly.
Part of, yet troublingly separate, with a will of its own.
And so, but you, so it looks this sort of blasé, sort of institutional building that you walk into, and there's classrooms and all sorts of other things, but then you go to the second floor, which you can only get into by, you know, a key card, and then all of a sudden, it's like, dun, 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 you walk into these halls of erotica.
No, seriously, is it, like, really, is it, like, prostitutes and lab coats, or, I mean, what's that?
It's, no prostitutes were there that I know of, but it's researchers, all doing neuroscience and all sorts of different... I was only anthropologist there, so it was like mostly public health and medicine and neuroscience and all sorts of other fields.
Really, I'm surprised there weren't more anthropologists.
Yeah.
I think this would be a hot topic in anthropology, right?
It was very interesting because it was really obvious from this workshop that, you know, the whole workshop they're talking about how important qualitative research is,
right,
and how these fields like psychology and stuff typically do quantitative stuff,
right,
and they want to introduce qualitative stuff. And the whole time I'm saying, like, you know, anthropologists always done qualitative stuff. Occasionally they need to introduce quantitative stuff. Mm-hmm. But it really seems like the right hand and left hand never talk to each other.
Do you mean qualitative stuff like, oh, that feels so good?
Exactly.
That any kind of quantification?
Well, interesting enough, they do that kind of quantitative stuff, the Kinsey. They have, like, a machine that... Well, masturbate a man, you know, and
are you serious?
please tell me if they call it the orgasmatron or something equally appropriate.
The wank-o-matic.
Exactly. Well, and, you know,
yeah, and why hasn't this been commercialized? Like, you know, if you talk about spin-offs, high-tech spin-offs from CS departments, Kinsey ought to be worth billions by now.
The Jerktron 5000,
Yeah, and, well, it can change speeds, and it can change, you know... tightness and things. And
What does it look like? Did you see this machine?
It's really nasty looking. I mean, it's like, you know, 2x4s connected to, like, this mechanical arm. Like,
they don't even, like, slap some makeup and a wig on it?
Nothing at all. Evidently, men don't need that. And so, you know, they give you a few Playboys, and then they sort of measure, you know, how long it takes and how much effort and the differences. They're trying to develop a similar thing for women, but they're having no luck. They've tried the butterfly. Do you know the butterfly with the vibrator that you hook on?
No. Well, of course I know, but perhaps you should enlighten our listeners.
It's a little tiny vibrator that you hook onto your legs, and then you can remote control, make it go higher or lower, and
it's
vibrate
against
your clitoris.
Like a non-penetrative vibrator, right? Like
So they were trying to use that, but it wasn't working well enough. Women weren't stimulated enough by just sort of looking at newspapers and magazines and things like that, like the men were. You know, they needed more. So they're still trying to figure out a way to quantify women's orgasms.
More like shadow puppets more, or more like actual human interaction?
Maybe shadow puppets. Well, naked shadow puppets.
Another thing you could look at, I guess you'd have to be in ballet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, wouldn't a female masturbation device, since you know, the female orgasm is so much more intellectual and emotional than the male orgasm, I mean, would you have to have it, like, a little speaking robotic voice being like, I care about your needs, you know?
Maybe you could get Barry White to do the voiceovers.
Well, you're still working on your dissertation, right? Maybe you could switch to that real quick.
Let's not go there right now, but seriously, I mean, you know, it's a rare woman that can have an orgasm just from physical stimulation. Is that not true? I mean, unless she's riding a pony or something.
Well, I guess it depends on the person she's with. I mean, if they know what they're doing, it can just be physical.
I mean, women can masturbate themselves.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
so,
it can be physical.
I mean, it's not like they're hopelessly dependent on some sort of emotionally vulnerable man.
But at the same time, even when women masturbate, you have to think about.
Sorry.
You have to think about.
Forgive my heteronormativity.
It's been a while for him.
Still, I make the point. I mean, knowing nothing about women as I do, I feel free to make this point, which is that, you know, when you're masturbating, you probably can't. You probably are thinking about, like, Fabio or, you know, Billie Jean King or, you know, whatever your, like, sexual fantasy is. I don't know.
But you could do that while strapped up to electrodes, you know.
But that would affect – well, I'm wondering, do they control
that? Are the point of these machines to make the people orgasm against their will?
Yeah, no. It's to be able to quantify.
It's a standardized orgasmatron.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, we didn't use any of those while we were there, although we wanted to. No. So the workshop on higher sexual behaviors, all sorts of people came. And then the professors, there was researchers from all over the place, psychologists and everyone. And they would give talks all week long about sort of quantitative methods and qualitative methods. And then at the end, we gave a presentation about our proposals and how they were going to improve from this week-long seminar. And then at the very end, we had to sort of write a 10-page proposal to sort of sum up everything we ever learned.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to talk about but when I was talking about sort of the physical place itself, like just walking through and the walls are just covered in erotica, you know, and there's all of these museums.
Like hastily taped up and stained, like in some teenage boy's room, or are they nicely framed?
Close. No, actually there was a little of both. Most of the stuff on the wall was nicely framed and matted. However, the Kinsey Institute gets way more erotica and artwork than they can ever afford to frame and mat. And so there's actually this new program called Art Adoption, in which you can adopt a piece of erotica, which our workshop adopted a piece.
What piece did you guys adopt?
Well, it's interesting. They chose me to pick out the piece.
And, wow. You're a hit everywhere you go.
I am.
I mean, when you say erotica, do you mean sort of relatively unique items with significant artistic intent, or do you mean just like clippings from, you know, barely legal?
It was typically, you know, something that you would consider art. I mean, okay. Some of them, they were clippings from, like, you know, 1920s magazines and things like that was, you know, eventually I guess you could consider art, but no Playboy or anything.
Okay,
like
so they clearly weren't going for mainstream porn. They were going for stuff with some other interest.
But a lot of it, I mean, like, in their archives, they had, like, you know, like their catalog system was amazing, and they'd have, like, whole drawers full of, like, penis as food, and it'd be, like, 1,000 pictures in that one. You know, or, you know, vagina as flower, and there'd be like 1,000 pictures in that one, or, you know, sort of.
Was there a whole subsection on Georgia O'Keeffe then, I guess, for that?
Exactly, yeah. She did a lot of that. and it was interesting from an anthropologist's point of view. They had one called Anthropological Sexual Encounters.
Really?
And since most of these were cataloged in the 50s and 60s, that had to do with any sexual encounter with somebody of color.
Oh, okay. How weird did the categories get? Was there something like vagina as a universal computing machine?
No.
Okay.
There were pretty weird categories, though, and in some of them you're like, why would there be 50 paintings of that or pictures of that or things like that?
As a sensitive gay man, how troubled are you by the fact that your microphone is like now in your lap, basically?
I'm a little troubled
like,
about it.
I was going to mention that, but I thought you
can't
wanted that.
Keep it up. I don't know why.
It's
I'm sorry. There's a reason I'm a lesbian now, evidently.
I was thinking maybe we should have part of our rule. We were talking about disrobing earlier and getting naked on the naked couch. I think maybe every time we mention the word lesbian, we should take off an article of clothing. Every time we mention the word, you know,
erotica,
heteronormative, we should put a article of clothing back on.
I mean, that sets up perverse incentives for, you know, for people to use the word lesbian as often as possible, even in contexts where the word lesbian isn't quite appropriate.
I think lesbian's pretty appropriate everywhere.
Oh, I guess you haven't started yet.
Well, maybe we should, you know, clue them in as to why we would want to disrobe. Do you remember last time?
I remember last time, but maybe our listeners don't. Well, see, the thing is, you have to understand, like, every time there's a hot chick on my couch, I ask her to take off her clothes. So I don't specifically remember asking you to get naked.
That's the way to make her feel wanted.
I believe.
Oh, my God. I had a number for him.
When did you get your tongue pierced?
7 months ago.
Are we aware of this? Is this in the show database?
I was aware of it, but I don't know if it was discussed. So do you have a well-fitting piercing now?
I do.
Before you had one that was too loose and then one that was too tight. And
right. No, this one fits very
just
well.
Just right?
Yeah.
We'd be ideologically remiss if we didn't ask about the sexual potency of the piercing.
Yeah, I've always been curious about this, actually. Maybe we should ask your. Maybe we should not say anything.
The question that goes to me, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe we should ask your.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what she thinks it does, and then for you to say what it actually
does. Well, I know theoretically what it's supposed to do, but I have to admit, I think it's more hype than anything. I don't think it's. I'm not really that impressed, and I'm not saying that personally towards Piper. I just don't think the piercing is that great.
Yeah. The piercing doesn't add much.
No, not really.
But then again, like when you're scaling the peaks of ecstasy that Piper can give you, like. Mm-hmm. That extra inch probably isn't noticeable, right?
How many more? Just kidding. and what was that?
Whereas on a lesser mortal, right, where we can barely get it up the foothills, perhaps tongue piercing.
Yeah, maybe. I think all men need to get one, but since I'm already so good, that, you know. No, actually, I have to say that although I don't think it changes what Jamie feels, I think it does change how easy it is for me. You know, I don't have to have sort of like a hardened tongue as long because I can use the piercing for a while instead of the tip of my tongue.
So you're saying it primarily allows you to slack off with no change.
Exactly. Well, there you go.
Okay. The important concept.
Yeah. You know, if you're going to be that way.
Because I like to go for hours and hours. Occasionally, you know, you're going to get tired.
Are there any kind of exercises you recommend to our listeners?
This is the part where she says, I really care about your feelings.
Right. I do really care about your feelings.
This is not looking good for lesbian relationships. Yes, 5 years. 5 years.
No, it's looking very good, right?
Like, yeah, the sex is still going after 5 years. Yeah. That whole lesbian bed debt does not exist.
Well, perhaps now it's time for you guys to start getting naked.
Well, begin a story.
The story, all right, so what happened was last week, or last time I was on, it's been months, I guess. It was said that everyone always disrobes in your presence. However, it was said that you just ask them to and they do it, and no one understands why, you being a gay man and them being typically straight women or just women in general. And so I felt, as a woman in general, like I have no problem taking off my clothes for you, you know, because I have no problem with nudity at all. However, I felt like I should get something in return.
Right,
and this
okay.
was what was going to be different from every other experience of nudity on this couch.
And today was the day you forgot to bring that box of lollipops.
Because you did have the peekaboo pants on last time, so I got a little peek.
You know, everything I have, I'm willing to give, but what do you have in mind? Some of my sweet, sweet lovin'? Did you want to see my extraordinarily fat and sweaty, unattractive body? I'm willing to grant you that.
Well, I believe the deal was I took off my shirt, you took off everything.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, when you say shirt, this isn't some like PhD semantic trap, right? I mean, we're going to see, like, nipples and belly button and lots of skin, right?
And the belly button piercing.
Oh, I didn't know you had belly button piercing as well. Wow.
So I think it
works for me. But I mean, I have to warn our listeners that I have some kind of genetic disorder which has caused me to be like fat and trollish and have a distorted small penis. But I'll do it.
How does that work for you?
You know, our listeners
that lure
can't
the
really
gay men
see
in?
You.
Right. Yeah, they don't get the profit. But,
yeah, I'm like that angler fish or whatever. Hold on.
Does it light up like ET's finger?
Yes. Ouch.
Well, we can turn off the lights and find out.
So will anyone else in the room be getting naked? Keep in mind there are 5 people here.
Currently I have a beautifying mud pack on my crotch, so I don't think I'm going to be able to get naked.
Does that glow in the dark too?
No, but it's just trying to reduce some of the youthful vigor to my pubic hair.
In all seriousness, Piper, you're about to see why I am the 800-pound girl of the show, and these two are just hangers-on, because I am willing to go the distance, and they're not.
The extra mile, right
get
there.
Get ready, baby. So, rub the Buddha.
Woohoo! Take it off.
So,
I should make this, like, sensual.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
See, our listeners are really missing out on the.
But also, I think our listeners and DJ Corey's nakedness have a long, almost lesbian bed death like relationship where you're just not going to make it sensual for them anymore.
That's true. I have to keep this sock on because I have a weird little cut on my foot, which is kind of gross looking right now. I mean, I'm trying to heal it medically, but let's just leave.
All right, won't you be happy because won't it draw attention from the other characters to your body?
So
you're
going
to get naked
normal.
All but one sock.
If that's all right. I mean, also, I think there's some kind of Pennsylvania.
I think you should give that to him.
I thought that was a gang sign.
That's kind of erotic on just on its own, really.
Oh, really? The sock thing?
Yeah, just the one sock thing.
Got these socks at Kmart.
Very nice.
I don't think we're important enough for you to get free socks yet. For saying that.
I have to check my underwear. You'll notice that I can't even tighten my pants all the way because I have to check my underwear too. These are my Kmart underwear.
Are they tidy whities?
Well, I don't know if they're like stained with protein stains or not. Like,
this is pretty.
How are we, why am I like almost naked and you're still.
Well, you have further
she
to go,
took
right?
Off, she took off some clothes already. So.
Can she just, like, be talking about something?
Yeah, I don't know. Tell us more about the erotic art at the Kinsey Institute.
Kmart underwear.
Since we're seeing a work of art, a masterpiece of the human form.
Yeah,
unveiled.
Nothing can compare with this, actually.
Much the way Michelangelo stripped the marble away from David's naked form. DJ Corey is stripping away the clothes from his.
My penis is especially small right now because I think because of the...
Because you're with lesbians?
Because I'm cold. Or it's like shriveled up. I'm serious. It's not even...
It's okay. Shrinkage is totally...
It's not even this small normally. I'm sure there's
normal.
Some kind of problem.
It's normal.
Well, think of it this
size
way.
Size doesn't matter.
I'm feeling...
Right. No one in this room is going to have sexual feelings towards you, no matter how large your
well,
penis
that's a good
is.
Point.
This is as safe a place as you can get.
I'm not sure that's true. His sexual magnetism has turned people away from their vowed sexual orientation. Before.
But luckily, he's keeping that sock on because, like, if that sock
that
is
would
gone,
be a place.
That's true.
Okay. Oh yeah. Oh. Ow. Ow. Actually, who's been on this couch before? Oh yeah, baby.
Woohoo!
See, it's small penis. I mean, I don't know what's it's like it normally stretches. Some time.
You could put a sock on it.
Well,
keep it warm.
That would violate my contract. All right, baby.
Very nice.
Small penis. I'm aware that there's a problem here. I'm trying to, like, lose weight, diet right.
R's equal.
When's the last time you've seen a diet right around here, too?
I had to go to Walmart for this. And Giant Eagle has them now, too.
I think we might be wandering afield here.
High earnings that we might garner after changing our emphasis to grocery talk. I want to get back to the Kinsey Institute.
Right. We were talking about porn. Erotica.
Yeah. Erotica. It was everywhere. It was fabulous. They actually have a book that they sell, The Art of Desire, which has a bunch of the erotica and talks about it.
So I'm curious, like you mentioned, okay, porn from the 20s or whatever. Like, two questions about that. One is, how do they store this stuff to keep it, to preserve it? And since there's probably a lot of early photographic processes. And also, like, what's their oldest piece of porn?
I probably really don't know the answers to either of those questions, actually.
I wasn't sure if you guys got a tour of the vaults or something.
We got a tour of, like, the libraries and some of the holdings. Like, they have a lot of sex toys and things like that in some of their archives. But there's an archivist there on staff that, you know, archives everything and keeps everything preserved. Funny, I talked to her for a while since we were adopting that erotica that we were talking about earlier. And you know, I asked her how she got sort of into archiving at the Kinsey and archiving all these sexual things. And she studied landscape archiving. So it was quite a fluke that she sort of got into it.
But wait, what does landscape archiving mean?
Typically, you know how to archive landscapes. So
landscape photos?
Yeah, landscape photos or portraits or things like that, so you know how to keep them up. And
you know, we didn't get to ask. Yeah, so your friends chose you to pick the piece of porn.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Not only did they choose me to pick the porn.
By the way, I noticed that Piper's completely welched on
her. I'm down to the single sock here. I mean,
you look really good. I'm talking here. He stopped talking while he was doing it.
That's true. You're holding up more than you're.
DJ Corey is able to talk and scoot his underwear off at the same time.
It was impressive.
I would have worn my cool, like, Jonathan, bikini. My Scooby-Doo underwear if I'd known.
Your
I was
banana warmer.
You have cool underwear?
No, it's all Kmart underwear. But I have a question for you, Art.
Wait, she wasn't. Sorry, she wasn't done answering my question, Mr. Pushy Pants.
Well, there's no pants there involved.
Yeah, that's Mr. Pushy No Pants.
Was it about what is landscape art?
No. I was asking her, she chose the piece of erotica that their workshop was adopting.
Right. And there were all sorts. I actually ended up choosing five different ones, and then I had them vote on them. And the one that we chose as a group was actually a photograph, an 80s photograph of a transgendered person halfway through the operations.
Mm-hmm.
So they had hormones for their breasts and cell penis. And
what's the target market for that?
I have man breasts already. Look at that.
Very nice.
Well, according...
But the reason we chose that was because we felt that sort of the transgender population was a population missing from not only the workshop, like the people there represented, but also the things we discussed, and we didn't have any sort of hypersexual behaviors for transgenders or anything like that, and we felt that was definitely missing. So that's why we chose that to represent us.
And there's quite a market in the pre-op transsexual crowd.
It's also a very contemporary issue. I think it's a very contemporary group right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a market. I mean,
it's a niche market, but it's...
Well, it's not a market for pre-op transsexuals. There's a market for porn of pre-op transsexuals.
Yes, that right. too.
Okay.
But as a friend of mine who went to Brazil a couple years ago mentioned, like, there was a particular lane on the beaches where all the pre-op transsexual prostitutes were, like all these super hot Brazilian women, chicks with things, as it were.
Yeah, there's a huge prostitution market for that.
Yeah, so. And Eddie Murphy.
Portrayed cinematically by Almodovar in All About My Mother.
And Eddie Murphy knows this well, right? Sorry, he was just giving a ride.
That was a straight transvestite. That wasn't transsexual.
Oh, okay.
We also had a T-shirt for the Kinsey Institute, so I helped. Not only did I pick out the artwork, but I also helped design this T-shirt that we got.
Wow!
And because I'm fabulous. No,
you are.
Does it have a catchy slogan?
It does actually. We kept calling it Sex Camp all week long because all week long we talked about sex, and then we go out to the bars and we talk about sex. So the T-shirt actually has the Kinsey logo on the front, and on the back it says, "My partner went to sex camp, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt."
See, I would think while you were there, you would get sick of talking about sex and start talking about where you could buy Diet Right, for example.
So here's my slogan. I'll just chime in. Mine would be, "Penetration is the sincerest form of flattery." Thank you.
Like, you're very lesbian friendly.
Imitation, sorry, I don't. Yeah, that's true. It's heteronormative.
Stimulation is the sincerest form of flattery, maybe.
Oh, that's good.
It is better. Maybe I'll think about that next year.
Wow, you are taking. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. You're taking off your shirt. Can we watch?
Yeah, you can watch. I'm okay.
But on.
Sweet.
But on.
You look much better naked than I do, I have to say.
I also have to say, though, that you have the benefit that no one here would be sexually attracted to you, but I don't think I have that benefit.
Our producer's checking me out. Interesting. Interesting. Well, I was going to ask a question a bit later to that. I mean, let's face it. I mean, these people who've all chosen to have lives in sex research, they're all like losers and dorks and freaks, right? They're all identity. And you're like this hot chick that shows up, and of course they're going to pick you as their leader because you're so, like, vivacious. I'm serious.
It's really interesting. There were, like, definitely extremes in the sex research world. There were people who were out there, you know, doing participant observation, like, having a whole lot of sex. And there were other people who, I swear to God, there were people that were virgins, never had sex. How can you study sex never having sex? Amazing.
It's like the Catholic priests giving advice about
marriage, yeah.
Marriage and so on.
It was also interesting, there were some people who felt that this would be the place to experiment. You know, although they had never experimented before, people who are going to the Kinsey might be more willing to experiment, and so they sort of, like, went there with a mission.
Yeah, and you have this excuse, too. It's like, oh, I've been meaning to, like, you know, decide whether having three penises rammed in me in all my orifices would be, you know, it's the one missing piece for my doctoral dissertation.
It's my valid research.
Is that what your doctoral dissertation is missing?
I just had a eureka moment, I think. I think that's it.
So there were many different, obviously, different presentations and things all of the researchers presented and all of the students presented. Some of the more interesting topics that were presented on, obviously my topic, pretty interesting, but you all have heard about that.
Has it just, bear with me because I've gone through it. That has been thoroughly discussed on the show.
It had a whole show on it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you mentioned tangentially, right? Like, oh, people came there to hook up.
Yeah.
And I was curious, like, did anything happen? Did anybody? No?
It almost happened, but it didn't happen.
Wait, are we talking about you specifically?
No, we're not talking about me.
Okay.
No, I know all.
Ask that. Okay. But you omnisciently know the sexual behavior of everybody during the whole week, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Or sexland, as they probably say.
Yeah. It was interesting, too, because they separated the girls and the boys. Like, we were on one floor and the boys were on another floor. Which was interesting because all of the boys were gay.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I guess that's why.
All but one, I guess.
So. You want to do a little bit of experimental research?
Mm-hmm.
Would you call it participatory research?
Yeah, participant observation.
So what were some of the other presentations that were on or some of the research that people were doing? You mentioned that most of them seemed to be epidemiologists or health professionals.
Right, so there was a lot of different research on sort of dyads, couple research, things like that. But some of the more interesting stuff was like circuit party research. Circuit parties, I don't know if you're familiar with them, they're like...
Well, exactly. Of course we are, but perhaps our listeners.
if you think of a rave and then make it almost all gay men and then make it really expensive, like $100, $200 a ticket, a three-day event, one per month or every other month, one per city per year, and then people sort of fly to them. So on the circuit, they go from one to the other.
These things are probably just soaked in drugs and sex, huh?
Soaked in drugs and sex. Hence why someone was studying them, because there was a lot of high-risk sexual behavior going on at them. And interestingly enough, this person that was studying them was getting commissioned by the San Francisco Zoo, because they have, a lot of the circuit parties have, like, color names, like black and blue and white. And one of these, I think black, I can't remember which one, is at the San Francisco Zoo, and it's their second largest moneymaker of the year.
Wow.
And it's a three-day long just party, anonymous sex everywhere, things like this. But
at the zoo?
At the zoo. But the zoo didn't want to get sued,
right.
And there was a lot of droppers who were taking ecstasy and acid and things and then fainting. And
wow.
They can get sued for that, so they were looking at safe ways to sort of have the party and still allow for things.
But so I'm interested, since the Kinsey suits, the focus is primarily sexual, was it focused on the sexual behavior or the drug use?
Actually, this particularly focuses on both because they were so intertwined, and a lot of times you can't take them apart. Oh. If you want to look at, you know, safer behaviors for drug users, you often have to look at their sex practices and vice versa.
And are they called circuit parties because there's a circuit of them that sort of the same crowd of people moves to around the country?
Yes, that's my understanding.
While you discuss these things, it would help my understanding if you would rub your breasts sensually while you're talking. I mean, we're probably not allowed by FCC regulations to actually have you moan out loud. Just like,
no, she can moan, but there's a decibel limit.
Okay. Could you writhe a little bit?
Will that do anything for you, being that you are a gay male?
Well, you know,
he's trying to get the ratings.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have to attach your little kinseyometer to my penis and turn on the, like, you have some kind of erectile strain gauge, right? That you can detect even minute amounts of sexual arousal. There's only one way to find out.
I think you're aroused already.
Well, intellectually, I am.
I would know, except for that your penis is so small, I can't tap.
It is small. See, it's shriveled.
You joke, Piper, but he's going to carry that forever.
That's right. I'm totally damaging it. It's in a state of crisis. It's my, you know, like when early man had to like fight wild animals in the out in the tundra.
Savannah, probably.
Savannah. You know, the genitals normally retract as a protective measure, and that's what's happening right now. I fear your lesbian influence, and that's why I'm adopting a defense. Normally, my penis is quite large.
And rampant, I would even say.
Well, interestingly, on the sort of naked topic, you know, my parents have listened to both the other radio shows, you know, both on my work and on me coming out and things like that, things they already knew.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, like, the side comments and things about your peekaboo pants and stuff, they found, you know, particularly humorous.
really?
Wow. So this one I think they would also find, you know, interesting.
Do you mean humorous or do you mean deeply emotionally touching?
I think both, if you know a parent.
So, wow, score.
So how do I address them? I'd like to, for a very special message right now to Piper's parents, I am pinching my nipples right now. Wow.
Wow. I think they really appreciate
it. How did your nipples do that?
I told you I was turning them on.
you wonder why I'm the most successful gay man in the tri-state area, and this is why.
Wow. Are any other parts of your body musical?
Well, you'll...
I have a feeling we're going to find it.
Could you pinch them and tell me?
So you said most of the men there were gay.
Yes.
Isn't that a little troubling, almost, to have straight men so... I understand that you could argue that it's a, you know, a nice change of pace from the traditional situation, but if you really want to openly study sex, right?
Well, it's a fascinating sort of flip-flop, because when Kinsey first started in the 50s and 60s, it was all white male straight researchers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of opening up, and, you know, that was definitely in the minority here. You knew many different minorities, ethnicities, sexualities. Although most of the women were straight. There were some lesbians and...
Yeah, I was going to ask if it was basically just a...
And there was also, like, only five guys. I mean, out of the students, there was 25 students, only five men.
Really?
20 women. A lot of public health, psychology, things like that.
I guess men just don't care about sex as much as they used to.
It's about time. But interesting, like, one of the... You know, they came from all over the world, and one of the researchers from the Czech Republic had a fascinating topic. She was studying something that may be close to your heart. It was gay male sex in public restrooms. And she was studying...
I don't know why I'm always, like, the gay scapegoat.
Well, she's listened to our shows, right?
Is there another gay another gay scapegoat candidate sitting in this room?
Gay, the gay goat.
So she was studying this in the Czech Republic. You know, obviously a universal phenomenon. Mm. And but more importantly, she had found this in... The Czech Republic, in the public bathrooms, they have attendants, you know, cleaning up after and things like that. And this woman who was an attendant in this bathroom had kept a diary.
Wait, there's a woman attendant in a men's bathroom?
Yeah, in this particular bathroom, wow. Yes. But a lot of times it's older women who still need jobs and things like that.
Interesting.
But this woman had started keeping a diary because she wanted to show her boss she deserved more money for what she had to clean up. And so every day she was keeping a diary of the sex encounters. She'd done this for 18 years.
That's a gold mine.
And then she just gave it to this researcher when she happened upon her. You know, she happened to walk into the bathroom and she's like, here, you need this. So, I mean, there's your dissertation right there. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, wow. So do you have, did you talk about this? Do you have any idea? Being a scientist, I'm curious about numbers here, like how many sex acts she witnessed over the 18 years?
Evidently, it was a phenomenal number. I mean, I don't know if at the specific city in Czech Republic, you know, it was more so just because this was a certain bathroom that everyone knew to go to, or if every bathroom in the Czech Republic is like this. Maybe you should go to the Czech Republic.
Well, if every bathroom is like it, those people have to be exhausted.
The thing that surprised me, first of all, is that, did she advertise herself as being, like, cool about this thing? I mean, obviously, if you go to have sex in a bathroom, there's some, like, elderly woman there. Kind of. I mean, they must have either not cared what she thought or didn't think she was going to call the cops. But maybe there's a whole different culture in Czech.
Yeah, I think it is completely sort of different.
I would think it would be sort of a buzzkill as well. Right, having anonymous sex with a surrogate grandmother figure within earshot? I don't...
Maybe it was a turn-on.
So the person who got this diary was what, an anthropologist? Was a doctor?
She wasn't doing anthropology. What was she doing? Oh my goodness.
this?
I want to say she was a sociologist. But
I'm curious how she's going to be approaching this, right? Like, it just seems
yeah,
like
well, it was interesting because, you know, during the whole week of methods and things they were teaching us, they kept saying, do more qualitative stuff, do focus groups, do, you know, go out and actually talk to people. Don't just measure what they say.
On a sexual focus group.
It was amazing, you know, like, these were like these epiphanies people are having, and I'm like, yeah, duh.
How come we never have a sexual focus group on the show?
I thought every week was a sexual focus group.
Yeah, what would we focus on?
Sex.
Like, what kind would be best for America? I don't know. Maybe we could get a company to sponsor a new sex act, like the Nike Thrust. We could focus group it.
There you go. Sounds like a plan.
Oh, sorry, I shouldn't be so heteronormative. The Nike Touch.
No, Nike can niche market and specialize. Oh, you know, they can have a straight version in that game. Yeah, the Swoosh.
The Swoosh.
That would be it.
Didn't they already have a Swoosh?
Well, that'd be the patented name. Or
they'd have to translate it into sexual terms to, like, expand the brand.
Uh-huh. So you need to gain new brand penetration, if I may use that term. I think I'm onto a billion-dollar idea here.
Well, I started thinking of whether there would be any local brands that would be participating, and then I thought, of course, of the Myron Cope 6-inch kielbasa.
Why not the giant eagle spread eagle?
On a similar topic that's completely different.
The pleasure bar.
David Johnson's Big Johnson.
Sorry, yes, please save us.
Why do the McDonald's in Pittsburgh have the brat Happy Meals? Are they like the only place in the United States you can get the brat Happy Meal?
Actually, I'm shocked that you were married in Madison, Wisconsin. And you would accuse Pittsburgh of being the only place you could get brat Happy Meals.
Can you get a brat Happy Meal in Madison?
Wisconsin is widely regarded as sort of the center of bratwurst.
That's not answering her question.
What?
That's not answering her question.
Sometimes you can, yes.
That was just, I knew you could get, you know, lobster Happy Meals.
In Maine?
In Maine, things like that. I just had never heard of the brat Happy Meal.
Actually, they're lobster rolls.
It's true, yes.
Not actual lobster in the Happy Meal.
The regional flair of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's nice that we can both Dr. Sexhelps and I can both invoke each of our respective native cultures, especially cuisines.
In a McDonald's context.
So clearly, are you suspecting some sort of, you know, phallic conspiracy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
well, there's the bun, right? Isn't that vaginal?
The brat in the bun.
Well, the bun itself.
How is the bun vaginal?
It's not.
Men have buns. I mean, couldn't it be homoerotic? A long phallic item inside of a bun?
If it's really symbolizing, you know, buns, they're usually applied to human beings, right?
True.
Then that transcends genders.
All right.
Basically, I'm just reaching for stuff here, scrambling. Trying to keep my eyes off Corey's rampant manhood.
Isn't it? Are you cold? I'm freezing.
So, you. How many different ways can you think of to, like, refer to the fact that my penis is small? Just let them all out. Don't be shy.
Try calling him Mr. Floppy.
Let's hold hands in a
loving, caressing way.
That's right.
I'm just pretending to be cold so that I can touch his naked body.
Wow. Go for it, babe. Did you want to, like, hold me to hold your hands in my ass crack?
Will there be any music?
Well, there's only one way to find out. So, but your time is valuable, you know, because God knows when we're getting you back here. Tell us more.
Especially
about
after this.
Actually, I had an actually incredibly important question to ask. I don't know if you were going somewhere with this, but...
No, none of my questions are that important.
I think the McDonald's thing is over, yeah.
Well, the thing that really bothers me about this Kinsey thing that you went to is the thing that bothers me about all research. I mean, it's like, in computer science research, I know people that are working on, like, emotion and, like, believability, and people who are working on, you know, human-computer interaction, and everybody that works on it is, like, the complete antithesis of what they work on. Like, these total, like, robotic alien life forms are like, I am studying emotion. I want to learn how human beings interact with computers. And these people, like, you know, if they didn't, right, I mean, they're like...
You're suggesting that scientists in general are studying things that they feel they themselves lack or inadequate are.
Well, just like these... You know, the stereotypical psychology student who goes into psychology for self-help reasons, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, so, exactly. So, and so, like, is America heading for a kind of sex-tastrophe when, like, all of these, like, Kinsey researchers, like, impose their work on the world and force us to comply with their, like, hideous, you know, bizarre intellectual sexologies?
I was hoping we would say mil-spec masturbation procedures.
Exactly, and this like bizarre like series of gears, cams, and 2x4s, the Masterbotron is just like a glimmer of the horrors to come. I mean, like.
Well, I think on one level, yes, you have a lot of sort of these quantifying things, but I think that was a good thing about this workshop was it was definitely pushing for that other qualitative work, that talking to people, not just jerking them off. And I think also what was good about this workshop in particular was that it was all these different disciplines coming together. Because you never see that. You know, in general, the right hand and left hand never talk to each other. Everyone's just sort of doing their own thing, going along. Everyone's reinventing the wheel as they go. And so it was nice they all came together to do this.
Do you ever, like, for example, would you ever hire, like, a hot guest speaker like Madonna or J-Lo or, I don't know.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
Exactly. Just to, like, people who actually are clearly successful at sex to, like, share their insight into, like, how they actually get it done.
How they play their sexual personas like a violin.
I do think that people have done the case study on, you know, people who are really? Out there doing it. Yeah, definitely.
I imagine there's a lot of research probably on porn actors and actresses. Or a lot of
oh, yeah, definitely.
Them, right?
There's also, you know, people doing sort of research on a lot of internet stuff was coming up this week. And it was like, you know, they were looking at hotornot.com and sort of the pictures of, you know, am I hot, am I not, and how people were reacting to those pictures. And they were using those pictures in research and things like that.
Are you on hotornot.com? I mean, you're pretty hot. That would give you like a 9.999.
You can't give decimals, but
well,
I mean that's you know almost literally indistinguishable from a 10.
I would only take off deductions since you're not totally naked, but that's the only deduction I could take off at the moment.
That's for next time.
And you're not rubbing your breasts centrally with cocoa butter. Do we have cocoa butter? Does our producer have any cocoa butter?
I'm sure if she's willing to use it, we can get some on short notice.
If only there were more time.
Some Vicks VapoRub.
As long as you keep away from the icy hot.
So what were they talking about? Am I hot or not? About. What about? Never mind. You know what I'm talking about.
What about hotornot.com were they talking about?
Were they talking? Yes.
So is it hot or not
about
within
which?
The academic community?
About what?
What people were judging them on. You know, sort of the whole idea, you know, that do we sort of judge people based on their
breasts,
right? Or whether their symmetry? On both sides of their face, things like that.
So before we really get into this, can I ask a background question? On amihotornot.com, are we getting like full frontal shots? Or is it just faces or what's the...
No nudity.
Go ahead.
It's whatever that the person downloads the picture of themselves.
So if they want to be fully naked except for Nixon mask, they can do that?
I don't think they can do
that. The rules are like there's no nudity. Yeah. I don't think every photo is screened.
Okay, so in a bikini with a Nixon mask, that would be okay.
There's plenty of bikini shots, okay. Yeah.
But...
Yeah. And a lot of times, obviously, people aren't putting their own pictures on.
Right.
You know, other people are putting them on.
So there had, like as you alluded to before, there's been a long line of research into what makes people attractive, right? There's been issues of symmetry, issues of sort of average features versus extremely distinctive features.
Right. And so this study in particular was just looking at headshots and sort of going through headshots and things like that.
And did it, was it, could you somehow pervert their research to produce the ultimate hottie for Am I Hot or Not?
Maybe they could. I don't know. We didn't discuss that level.
No, I know someone who actually said they took all the composition of a perfect woman, and that person actually exists, supposedly. And I think that's supposed to be Halle Berry. That's what I was told.
I can believe that.
Yeah, she's, you know, very symmetrical face, you know, small. Everything is in proportion.
I also heard there was a study, though, that if you take, you know, all the prison inmates and, you know, put all their faces together, like at one of those photo shots that, you know, morph two things together, you also get, like, the ideal beauty.
Beauty man, beauty woman?
Either. It depends on what you do. If you do all women or if you do all men, you know.
Well, if it's true that people seek out very average features as a sign of beauty. Which I've read studies that have indicated that.
Which you're hoping is true.
Which I'm hoping is true. So it's my face, your penis, DJ Kosa.
The research I've seen is that while people do find people of very average features above average attractiveness, the people that they single out as exceptionally beautiful are almost always distinctive
freaky
in some way.
Freaky show liars, yeah.
Yeah, so. But so that's interesting. So they tested with, have they, for example, like taken all the computer science grad students, put them together and come up with Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf or something?
God
rest his soul.
He's dead?
Yes.
Yes, he's dead. So I'm curious, did they do other things other than prison inmates?
They did. They did all sorts of different things. And I'm not really versed on the literature at the moment. But
is that true with female prisons too?
Yeah,
female prisons?
It was actually.
I'm actually thinking that, like, the, for example, the height of your own breasts as divided by the base is the golden mean, as far as I can estimate. I think there may be some truth to this. What is the golden mean?
It's the
I bet, I mean, numerically 1.7, 1.6.
Yeah, isn't it that ratio, the rectangular ratio that gets used in a lot of Greek buildings?
Yes, but what's the decimal expansion?
Oh, I don't.
1.6 something. It's irrational.
As are my breasts.
So did you come away from this? Did you come away from this conference with any new friends, any new pals?
Yeah, quite a few actually. And there's a whole list for just the people who went to the workshop, and so emailing each other all the time and stuff.
Well, if any of them would like to appear on Pittsburgh's leading public affairs sex talk show,
we are the nation's 20th biggest media market.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. And so you can do call up shows and things.
Oh, sure. Yes, we have. We've done some good ones in the past.
Yeah.
I wasn't purely trolling for guests. I was hoping for like. Personal shenanigans.
I'm not ashamed to troll for guests.
Great. I'll get you some guests and personal shenanigans.
So did you hear any good sex stories?
Well, you know, I was doing most of the talking. It was interesting, too. We actually went on two field trips to sex stores in...
they must get that all the time.
Well, it was interesting, like, all of these researchers had never been to a sex store. And so, like, I took a group of, you know, researchers with me, you know, because I happened to be going. And going and throwing them things, you know, and they're like, Piper, what is this to? Piper, what's this for? Piper, what about this one? And so, you know, I'm telling them about everything. And so when we went back, you know, to the dorms we were staying in, they sort of spread the word. And so then I had a whole new group that wanted to go with me, you know. So I had to take them out again.
I can't believe Kinsey doesn't have a sex store in, you know, with its own self-branded stuff. Right?
Exactly.
It should. It needs to make more money.
Oh, man, that's a brilliant idea.
Having funding, yeah. That'd be great.
I mean, if the L.A. coroner's office can do it, you know, Kinsey can certainly do it.
I mean, speaking of coroners, I think...
The coroners make sex toys?
Yes, but you can also use them as mugs. And, most people use them for that purpose.
And you can get jackets and...
T-shirts, a whole bunch of novelty items. So.
Right.
All of which are certainly useful in one of a number of sexual scenarios.
I mean, Piper, I think you're... I mean, it's evident to me, and it should be evident to you, that you're missing out on a huge opportunity. I don't think you should go away for 2 years. You should, like, you could become the king, the queen of sex, like, in America. Like, all these sex researchers love you. They revere you. You could become, like, the world's most important.
But even the queen of sex has to pay her dues, right?
Although I feel like I've already failed in my obligations because that drive-up sex place we were talking about last time,
the drive-up stripper?
Yeah, it's out of business. I never got to go.
Where was this?
Near Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it was right outside of Pittsburgh.
There was a drive-up sex place, and you two never went?
Drive-up stripper.
$10 per carload. We never made it.
And you could go by the carload?
Mm-hmm. Every time I get in the car with Dr. Sexopoulos, he starts touching me in the bathing suit area. So, we just had.
But you've never once said bad touch, so you can't start complaining now. It's.
Anyways, I am outraged at you two.
It's a smell of the fine velour in your Toyota. Yeah, I know. And also, friend of the show, some friends of the show wanted to go to, and we just never got off our collective fine, fine butts to do it.
You're too busy being, you know, studious students.
Yep, exactly. Too busy working for the man. You know, I've actually never been to a strip club, so this would have been my first.
Never been
to a Hooters.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
What is it?
I've been to, like, gay male strip clubs, gay women's strip clubs, straight women's
this
strip clubs.
Strip.
On my first and last trip to a strip club, my co-hosts forced me under the wheel where I was spun around, humiliated, and forced to bark like a dog.
How much of that was forced?
I will admit that that's all true, although I'll say I've never seen DJ Corey happier than when he came out of the other end of that metaphorical tunnel. Never.
So, actually, I mean, we're almost out of time, and I would actually like to end the show on kind of an unusual note, which is... we've got about 90 seconds. Do you think you two could engage in a 90-second passionate lesbian embrace while we watch?
She has to put her shirt on, though.
Her shirt back on?
In 90 seconds?
Is that how you...
you just
75 seconds.
We can't
oh, yeah.
Really?
Wow.
They're just kissing each other's necks.
Why did we put this at the beginning of the show?
It's more like a Laurel and Hardy intimate embrace. She almost fell over.
with all these mics and cords and things. We're usually much more graceful.
No.
Maybe you should have given them the couch to themselves, DJ Corey.
Oh, that's true. Well, I've kind of sweat and like.
Yeah, I don't know if
that'd be there now.
Oozed onto this corner of the couch.
It'll be sure just like the Fat Man D beanbag chair that will forever be known as the DJ Corey corner of the couch.
Yeah, it smells kind of musky over here. I don't know if that's me or your
thinking that was you.
Pheromones.
Although, you know, you did manage to keep your sock on the whole show.
Well, this is my...
You retained your innocence.
In my culture, this is actually the most erotic part of the body, is the left foot. And so, I keep that covered.
What? Is that Mennonite?
Men at night. Men on...
That was pretty good.
All right, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. I see Andrew in the house... Which means
word up.
Well, no. In all seriousness, prepare for an excellent hip hop show.
And Jamie and Piper, as always, it's a delight. Please join us again. Thank you so much for getting naked with me.
Thanks for putting up with our shenanigans,
listeners. Thanks for listening and tune in next week, Tuesday at 11. And stay tuned for the most outrageous, fantastular hip hop show your ears have ever heard. One. I forgot to say WRCP Pittsburgh.